Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, the podcast that generates positive energy. My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host. And on today's episode, I interview Curtis Shuck, executive director at the Great Northern Corridor Coalition, about the backbone of our economy, the rail. Shuck oversees a number of states in northern United States and shares with us some of the trends, expansions, and innovation happening in the rail and its distribution system. In just a moment, Curtis Shuck, our exclusive interview. But first, I want to take a moment to remind you good folks to please support our sponsors. They literally keep our lights on. It seems everywhere I go these days, someone is telling me about the success of Hatch Coaching. Listen to what professional speaker Mark J. Lindquist has to say.
To see Eric Hatch grow his business and then start to share it with other people, I think is one of those great steps in life. You know, what do you do in society? You succeed at a thing and then you teach other people how you did it. And now to see Eric duplicating his genius across the country, I'm telling you, there's a world changer down the street, and his name is Eric Hatch.
For more information, call 701-212-1572 or visit coachingwithhatch.com. That's coachingwithhatch.com. All right. Well, let's start off by giving you a little micro commercial, if you will. Tell us a little bit about the organization that you're the director for there.
So the Great Northern Corridor Coalition is a nonprofit 501c3 educational foundation. And essentially, we represent eight states, about 15 public ports, 162 counties, from Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois. So essentially the High Line, or the, you know, what used to be the footprint of the Great Northern Railway.
Is Joliet still a big player in the rail world these days?
Joliet?
Illinois.
Yeah, you know, not as much. You know, interesting in this part of the country currently, you know, the interchange or the exchange point for the Montana Rail Link and BNSF happens at Laurel, Montana. And so that's a big, there's a lot going on there. You know what I mean? A lot going on in Laurel on the, what used to be the Northern Pacific route, the, you know, that ran on the southern, you know, through Bismarck and obviously started, you know, in the Fargo area and rolled through, you know, the southern portion of Montana. You know, now BNSF shares its rights or supports the Montana Rail Link, which actually has a lease over that old line. But there's a lot of activity here, you know, and as we're looking at traffic out of North Dakota particularly, the nice thing is you got a couple of options, or the railroad has a couple of options in terms of routing, which really helps for, you know, capacity and velocity decisions that the railroad makes as far as getting products to market.
I'm showing my age a little bit. You mentioned Illinois, and right away I was thinking about an interview I had with some guys that were figuring out gas stations, and they started with Joliet, Illinois, because that was a major fleet trucking exchange, not the rail. And so, sorry about that. I'm showing my age. I'm getting a little bit confused, and my wires aren't crossing as good as they used to. But Laurel, Montana, okay. Are there any other of those exchanges along the way? I mean, you mentioned eight states, and so, you know, kind of, is there, how does that work, I guess, if you guys are overseeing it? Is there, talk to me a little bit about that eight-state part with the different crossover. You know, you mentioned Laurel, Montana. Are there any other ones along the way?
Oh, gosh, yes. There's many interchange points. You know, so what our primary mission is to help to create, you know, this public-private partnership and really focus funding on certain projects that benefit the entire corridor. And you know, as you mentioned, you know, eight states and 162 counties, that can be dicey, in terms of trying to get everybody on the same page as far as, you know, a list of priority projects and then the discussion about how we're going to approach funding. You know, this year we've got 8 projects that we're supporting, that the coalition is supporting from Washington across the entire corridor. 2 of them actually are in North Dakota that we're working with the North Dakota Department of Transportation on. And, you know, so it's an exciting opportunity to really bring a focus on to, you know, a corridor-wide investment from the federal transportation funding program, as well as, you know, managing our private partners. Obviously, BNSF Railway is a big, you know, is a big partner for the coalition, but so are each of the states. And, you know, I think specific to North Dakota, the North Dakota Department of Transportation has been key. One of our executive board members now is Commissioner Doug Goring with the North Dakota Department of Agriculture. So we're starting to see agriculture have a larger, more defined seat at the table. And as you remember, Jason, you know, a couple years ago when crude by rail was really, at its peak, that interface between agriculture and energy really became strained at times, because, you know, the farmers felt that the oil trains were taking precedent, and the oil shippers felt like the ag trains were taking precedent. Well, now this organization hopefully will help to, number one, you know, continue to support funding for projects, but also, you know, have a way for a forum for folks to work together from these different industry groups. And it's been super successful, and I'm excited to be able to be.
How is the ag crude balance out there? I wanted to ask you about the different exchange stations. I want to get back to that, more of an indicator in terms of if you're seeing any sort of like fracking sand or lumber, any sort of economic indicators you might see being on and off the rail. Because to me, the railroad is the backbone of the economy. And so you take a look at what's being shipped to the rail, and you can prepare yourself for a year or two, you know, that sort of thing. It trickles down is what I'm getting. It ripples out through the rest of the economy. But let's start with that crude and ag relationship. You're right, there was a little bit of a strained relationship there. And now that, honestly, and I never even thought of this till right now, even back then we were putting out 1 million-plus barrels a day, and we're still putting out 1 million-plus barrels a day. So I know BNSF made some major investments, and they got some new rail cars and that sort of thing, but are we having any more of those choke points, or are they seem to be kind of satisfying both the oil men and the farmers?
Well, so a couple of things to your point. You know, BNSF had invested a significant amount of money, not only in equipment, you know, tank cars, but also in the physical infrastructure. So, you know, the railroad itself, the track bed, new track, new double track in places, new bridges, you know, to the tune of nearly $4 billion. And we're really seeing the benefit of that now by, you know, the manifestation is reduction in congestion. You know, also some of the other infrastructure that's been put in place, things like the Dakota Access Pipeline and other pipeline capacity that's come online, has also started to ease some of that burden on the rail transportation side. And, you know, of course, the whole market dip put a big dent in that as well. And so now, you know, interestingly enough, the balance is really good. Agriculture is still super strong. Is the leading commodity on the high line right now. The amount of product that's moving across the network is pretty significant, along with consumer goods. So a lot of the containerized freight that you see moving across the country right now. And that comes in two fashions. That's both domestic intermodal and international intermodal. And that's super strong, very, very busy in this lane as well. automotives are still very strong. A lot of trade with Pacific Rim. And, of course, that's both inbound and outbound. It's pretty neat to be able to go to the ports of the Pacific Northwest and watch us exporting Chryslers and Chevrolets to Asia and different parts of the world while we're importing, you know, Toyotas and Hondas and some of these other name plates. So there's a good trade balance happening there. You know, certainly, you mentioned lumber and forest products. You know, with some of the storm events that we've seen here, especially over the last 12 months, has really driven, you know, an uptick in the amount of forest products that are moving from the Pacific Northwest into Chicago. And then, of course, you know, from Chicago, that's the primary interchange point now for BNSF Railway to be able to connect up with the Eastern Railroads, with the Norfolk Southern and the CSX. So that's where, you know, again, a lot of the traffic that we see going by, you know, as we're in Tioga or Williston or Grand Forks is mostly headed for that interchange in Chicago. So, you know, today, as of earlier this week, you know, we're running about 40 plus trains a day across the High Line. It's about 40 to 45 is about capacity. And that's really got to do with, you know, crews and equipment and fueling capabilities at certain locations. But that's pretty good volume. That's still real steady volume.
How about on the import side? You know, you mentioned kind of some consumer goods and ag was grains, if you will, seem to be kind of the exporting out and even domestically. But how about on the import side? You mentioned cars, but anything else? I imagine consumer goods are pretty big, but are you seeing any big trends there in terms of what we are taking in from other countries?
You know, we're starting to see, you know, more balance on some of the steel side, some of the dimensional and tubular steel. You know, so much of that has been in the past and still is tied to our international trade relations and the various and sundry tariffs that get placed on those specific commodities. The majority, though, of the traffic that we see from a railroad perspective is really in the containerized consumer goods, and that's, gosh, anything, you know, any numbers of products that are shipping, and most of that actually comes in through the ports of Seattle and Tacoma, which is now the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and ends up going to Chicago for distribution, either, you know, in the heartland or for moving further to the East Coast. And so, you know, interestingly enough, for us here in the Midwest, North Dakota, particularly, those trains just kind of roll on by, and you know, for our shippers in North Dakota who are interested in taking advantage of some of those, you know, intermodal economics, you know, they find themselves having to go to hubs in Chicago, sometimes Minneapolis, St. Paul, but mostly Chicago, to be able to take advantage of that. So we're trying to work on maintaining North Dakota's competitiveness on the global stage, and looking at, you know, always looking at new opportunities to lever, you know, rail transportation and make it more, and number one, efficient, and then number two, cost effective.
Curtis Shuck on the line with us here. We're talking a little bit about, I guess rail transportation would be the way to describe it. Curtis is with the Great Northern Corridor Coalition, and just a few more questions left here. I wanted to ask you about those exchanges again, and the last question I had on those was, I know some other people were looking at building, you know, areas close to the rail because of the environmental solutions and just kind of that new safety and environmental wave that was coming to light, and there was a lot of new requirements and regulations that came in with chemicals being shipped and different products being shipped on the rail. So Is any of that construction coming to fruition? I haven't really followed up in the last few years on that, but was there a lot of investment being done in those areas where the rail, you know, comes and where people are doing the newer chemicals, if you will?
Yeah, we're definitely, you know, especially now with the rebounding crude oil price, we're starting to see more facility investment. You know, a lot of that was put on hold, you know, in 2014, 15, and 16 with, like I said, with the downturn and crude pricing. But, you know, the one thing that's interesting, Jason, and I think was exciting during that time period is it really did drive a focus on efficiency and a focus on partnerships. We saw that a lot specifically in the Williston Basin. And now that the price is rebounding and there's an uptick in activity levels in the Bakken in particular on oil and gas, one of the things that we're seeing, and you mentioned those interface points, and those are really critical. The terminals that we've got in North Dakota are super strategic. And, you know, one of the things that the Great Northern Corridor Coalition focuses on is the fact that we are a multimodal organization. We know that, you know, there's a first mile and a last mile for every little bit of freight that moves. And so while rail transportation is an important component of that, really, we can't solve the puzzle if we don't have solid roadway connections and solid trucking partners and, you know, all of the things that go along that with the communities. And in fact, I think one of the evidence of that, of the fact of how critical that is to us, is that the two projects that we're supporting in North Dakota for the North Dakota Department of Transportation, both of those are highway projects. So the first project we're supporting is the replacement of the Long X Bridge on Highway 85, which is, you know, obviously a critical north-south connector. But the second project is the improvements to Highway 1804 east of Williston to Newtown. And I think that, you know, from a corridor-wide perspective, one of the things that we focus on is making sure that freight, whether it's energy freight or agricultural freight or, you know, consumer goods freight, has the ability to move. Now, along with that, is also the development of some new terminals and the repurposing of some of the old terminals. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure that's in place in North Dakota today. Many of the crude loops or the crude facilities that really helped to pioneer the industry are looking at sort of repurposing themselves right now. And we've got an opportunity to be working with several of them. And part of what we do is you know, consult on, you know, relationships with the railroad or consult on new business opportunities. And then also making connections with our global contacts, our port partners in the Pacific Coast, our business partners in the Chicago and Minnesota area. So it's an exciting time. It's really exciting for North Dakota right now as we're kind of reinventing ourselves here.
Well, that seems to be the common theme, reinvention. And, you know, when you're talking about those interchanges, all I can think of is those old grain elevators, how they look so weathered and everything. And it works for grain, I get it, but so much advancement has done in so many different areas. So I was glad to hear that a lot of investment has been going into those interchange modals, but then also that you guys are keeping an eye on the highway because, as I mentioned earlier, the railroad is the backbone of the economy. Well, then the truckers play a big part of it too, as the nerves and the bones, if you will. But you need that backbone, which the rail does. And then from there, the trucks. So you're right to, you know, say we got to pay attention to these highways too. Is that pretty much discussed all the time, how, you know, the different parts of the economic ripple that the rail really does, I guess, represent and support?
Absolutely. And, you know, everybody everybody is looking for, you know, the fastest route to market and the cheapest route to market. Every one of those discussions includes truckers or the need to move freight by truck. You know, interestingly enough, it also, you know, includes the community discussions as well. You know, we all operate with a social license, and, you know, we all have the requirement to be, you know, to be good actors and good operators. And so, you know, as we're supporting, you know, new projects coming along in terms of terminal development, you know, one of the things that we're really focused on is helping them with their community relations as well. And, you know, that's why a lot of my job is getting the word out, you know, about the Great Northern Corridor Coalition, and the fact that we're a connected network, if you would, or an internet of things. And that really becomes important, Jason, like on the West Coast, where, you know, some of the environmental regulations and some of the community perspectives and politics are certainly nothing like we face every day in North Dakota. And just that understanding of how important it is for all of us to see this as a national asset, you know, and again, and our railroads are only going to be as successful as our port facilities are on the West Coast, especially as we're trading with Asia. So, you know, we're hoping to continue to improve those relationships between the states and between the shippers and the growers or the producers. So that's another really important part of our mission right now.
Any final thoughts you might have? Anything we left out? Anything you want to reiterate along those lines? Of course, this is Curtis Shuck. He's the executive director with the Great Northern Corridor. And if the floor is yours for any final thoughts you might have, sir.
Well, I just wanted to say to everyone that, you know, the Great Northern Corridor Coalition has selected Williston, North Dakota as its home base. You know, we represent over 38 million Americans and 162 counties, and we're really proud to be able, like I said, to call Williston and North Dakota our home. And so appreciate the support, Jason, from you and the Crude Life team, and we look forward to staying in touch and keeping you guys up to date.
And that was Curtis Shuck, Executive Director at the Great Northern Corridor Coalition. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter. We're also on social media. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Of course, all of those social media links are available at thecrudelife.com. Once again, I'd like to thank you one more time for supporting our sponsor. And if I could ask you to do one step further and just go to our website, thecrudelife.com, click on the sponsors tab and just take a look at our sponsors. See if there's anybody there that you might know, that you might want to reach out to, or heck, even better, you might want to do some business with. That would be fantastic. They keep interviews like this free, and they keep the positive energy flowing. And that's going to do it this episode. My name is Jason Spies. This is the Crude Life Podcast, generating positive energy. We'll see you next time, folks. The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
It's a bright shining with a mocky sign. A frozen cobblestone reflects the night. Riding up the smiling face with all the people passing by. It's the Broadway shining with the marquee sign. Frozen cobblestone reflects the night. Small city, it's a big time life. And I'm walking, I'm talking, I'm smoking, I'm choking with the people that I know. I'm thinking, I'm drinking, I'm spinning, I'm grinning. and chill down to my toes. Well, I'm glad I don't live too far away. Well, the moonlight shining on my walk home. I'm breathing in cold air, exhaling smoke. So quiet I can hear it all. And I'm walking out.
Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
When you get Eric Hatch involved in something, you get 100% of him. You get him, you get his team, you get his family, now you get his kids. This is a guy that puts his heart into his work. What I really appreciate about Eric is his vulnerability. And there's times he hits home runs, and there's times where maybe it doesn't go the way everybody hoped. But I've always respected how much he loves his work. I got to watch him give a talk at TEDx Brookings, where he gave a talk, and I saw him come into his own, where he shared uncomfortable things from his past in a way that created a teaching environment. It's been said that if you want to create competition, tell everyone your success, and if you want to create compassion, share your weaknesses. And Eric's somebody that could easily lead with all he's accomplished, and it's a long list.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.